Thank you, Rose. It's just goodbye. Thank you very much. Let me first say that I have, as you've seen, I changed the subject, the title, to reflect what was in the program. I was supposed to talk about the new vertex, but the reason I've changed is one that I talked about that in Zakopan, and I will presumably talk again in Nottingham. There have been some ideas here in Marseille developed, so I thought it was more interesting of telling you about this new thing. So, thanks everybody for being here. Let me also say that if you don't hear me well, please let me know if I have to talk louder or more slow or more clear. So the title is Stepping Out of Homogeneity in Luftfahrt and Cosmology. This is about quantum cosmology, and this is work that I've done with Francesca Ridotto, who is an undergraduate student from Padova, who spent a year here in Marseille with us. Let me say first that I'm not an expert in loop cosmology. Nobody here in Marseille is an expert in loop cosmology, so this is coming from outside. I mean, many of you know anything more than I about quantum cosmology, so everything we presented with a lot of caution here. What we essentially want to do is to offer some ideas and some suggestions on something which I believe is initial and presumably can be done better, can be developed better. So this is in a very preliminary sort of first version presentation. So then go to slide number two, the outline. I'll start with discussing why we want to do in homogeneities and with the discussion of the cosmological principle, which in some way motivates the particular way in which we discuss homogeneities that I'll discuss. And then point three and four, this is the first main result. I'll present a set of models, a family of models, that are supposed, we all describe non-homogeneous cosmology, and I'll first present them in the classical theory as mathematical dynamical models and discuss the interpretation and then do the quantum theory. In particular, point five, I will illustrate as an example the simplest of these, which we call dipole cosmology, even if it's really nothing to do with the dipole. We will take this n=2 case and do an approximation inside this n=2 case and search for the homogeneous model within it. So, and this approximation, we will argue, has to be a Bose-Oppenheimer approximation. Using this approximation, we will be able to recover the structure of quantum cosmology. So, the next slide number three, I'll start by illustrating why we want to do. So the way we view this is that loop quantum cosmology, as it is now, is presumably the most successful physical application of loop gravity, and is the most promising avenue towards an empirical test. It has to take it very seriously. The obvious thing to look at is how to improve it, including the inhomogeneity. Of course, there is some work in this direction. I just want to mention the Madrid group, Guillermo Lewis and Mercedes in the Gaudi model. This is not what we're doing. We're not doing Gaudi models. We are addressing the homogeneous degree of freedom in a different way. And why? In a sense, as the body said in Zakopan, one can be regarding homogeneities near the quantity, near the bounds, where the quantum physics is supposed to be relevant for cosmology, and reinsert inhomogeneities only later when we are out of the quantum space. This is, of course, doable and viable, but it's legitimate to ask if this approximation is sufficient, and in particular, it's legitimate to ask what does the theory tell us about the fluctuations of the homogeneous degrees of freedom at the bounds itself. So the real question we have in the back of our mind is number two on the slide. Can we describe the full quantum geometry at the bounds, or at least can we describe more of quantum geometry at the bounds going beyond the homogeneous approximation? There is another question that we have in the back of our mind, which is the fact that homogeneity in the currently sort of fashionable version of the history of the universe are believed to play a major role in such formation. Most of that work is done in a background dependent language, right? One has a classical cosmological solution and one studies quantum free theory of it, and so on and so forth, and galaxies come out from the Lagrange fluctuations, etc. Now, I think given the way we look at gravity, it would be much better if we could understand this in our background independent language. And what we present here is sort of a first step to develop some tools to go in that direction. And the fourth question, which perhaps is the most relevant of all, is the initial correlation between loop quantum cosmology and full loop quantum gravity. Of course, a lot of people looked into that, Martin, Jonathan Engels, Jacob, I remember the Fleischack, Christian Fleischack, who told us that a certain way of looking at this relation is not viable. This is a key central open problem on which we hope here to offer some idea of how to think about. And this is essentially the contribution of suggesting the goal of an angular approximation as a way to see the quantum cosmology within a more complete quantum gravity model. So these are the questions, and in the next slide, slide number four, I am basically repeating one of the talks a little bit more in detail to present the strategy with which we want to address this question.
Can I just make one small comment?
Sure.
You refer to something that I said in the second part. I just want to clarify what I'm seeing.
Thank you.
Certainly, I don't want to say that it is obvious by any means that the homogeneous degrees of freedom are the ones that are most relevant here. There are different suggestions coming from various directions, such as the decay and behavior and so on. But it is something, therefore, it is not impossible that the particular degree of freedom is dominated by no one's clear. I just want to say that I don't think too much.
Sure. Sure. I say that. In fact, what I wanted to say is that in structural formations, presumably the original homogeneity don't play a role only later. In any case, I think we agree that the main point may be the best thing to do is to have a non-homogeneous model and try to see what happens in the model itself. Okay, so slide number four, this is the full strategy, the full story in a few words. So the starting point is a discussion of the cosmological principle and the approximation on which cosmology is based. That will be later in the next slide. And this point two will lead us to the idea that we can perhaps expand the theory adding degrees of freedom one by one. So cosmology is basically generative of single degrees of freedom, the scale factor. And the idea here is having a family of models with each one of the finite number of degrees of freedom, but with an increasing number of degrees of freedom, which capture more and more degrees of freedom of gravity as if we were doing polar function, a modest function, the dipole, particle, etc. We're not doing a modest function, but it's like a modest function in the sense that shorter and shorter wavelengths are built in one by one in new models. way of viewing this is to approximate the dynamics of
MIT.
Of a triangulation with a finite number n of separator. Once again, please don't take that literally, because that's not what we can literally. It's just in particular, we're not doing a regular calculation of class separator. It's an intuitive way of what is going to come in a moment. So, at fixed n for each one of these models, we will write a dynamical system that approximates Einstein equations, of course, in some regime, and we hope this is the right regime. And this, the reason we can do that is because we have a formulation of the Hamiltonian constraints, which sort of keeps us in this approximation within this this model. And this Hamiltonian constraint corresponds to what in algebraic quantum gravity is called the non-graph changing Hamiltonian constraint. And we'll argue that in some sense this approximation is valid. So with this version of the Hamiltonian constraint, we have a consistent dynamics for each one of these models. Then at 3.5 we study the n equal 2 case. So this is a simple first step out of the model which has the
cosmology of freedom
that is a genus cosmology, but the genus for numbers to be the freedom something like that. Within the we do a border banana approximation and try to extract the quantum cosmology from that. So let me start next slide, slide number 5, on the general argument for going in this direction. There's a couple of points which are important to take into account the follows. So, cosmology is born with Einstein's 1917 paper, in which he introduced the cosmological principle, where he says that to study the dynamics of the universe, By a certain end. So it is an expansion in the dimensional number, which is the factor divided by the short. Now, if this is the case, by cutting to a certain value of n. Namely, as I already suggested before, cut the beginning of freedom of generativity to all the large scale ones, the large scales relative to the scale factors, so the largest one. Now, this is what we want to do, and in particular, we want to do it by choosing a finite number of degrees of freedom, which are defined and more or less by averaging the metric over the synthesis and the triangulation formed by that synthesis. So this n, which roughly has to do with a over lambda, it is not defined as something proportional to a over lambda, is the number of synthesis in which we sort of split the universe, and the degree of freedom is forget about generativity for the moment and just define the model by itself, and then later argue whether or not it has to do anything with the fluid dynamics equation. On this slide, there is the complete definition of the model. So the model is defined by this 1 to 7 equation, more precisely a family of models. So the starting point is to choose a triangulation delta n of a three sphere. This is a topological three sphere, so triangulation in the sense of a combinatorial data. This is a triangulation with n as a regular, and one in the middle, that means that there's n faces, two n triangles, and I use a T to label this later, and an F to label the I like to keep the variables of the model, the personal structure, and the Hamiltonian or the constraint, and of course the invariant will be constrained. So the variables are group variables, UF, so one for each case, each triangle, and ES, one for each triangle again, UF is the group, and E is the algebra, and in the next line of the slide, there is a convention about what is the U and the E associated to the phases with the open orientation. This is technical, but will be important in the following, for not getting confused. So these are the variables, the group elements, the U and the E. The quantum brackets are given in equation 3, 4, 5, and using commutes, E and U is the
triangulación.
It's not for the complex structure given by the group structure of the group. And in the next slide, I will argue. So this is the kinematic. What about the dynamics? It's defined by two. Set of constraints, a gauge constraint GT, one for each tetrahedron, which is defined by the sum of any variable to the four faces, over the four faces of the tetrahedron itself, and a Hamiltonian constraint, again, one for each tetrahedron, which is defined as the sum over couples of distinct faces of the tetrahedron itself, T. And in the case of EE times UF prime minus UF prime, is a complex of UF going all around the link, allowing that I'm using linking to different meanings here, say all around the loop that looks around the edge where the two triangles F and F prime meet. In the next slide, there will be a picture that makes it a little bit more clear. So this is the definition of the of a dynamical model for each triangulation, not for each end, because for the same number of ends, there will be a triangulation. So for each triangulation of a fifth gear, there is a dynamical model defined.
No. Why the
Carlo, I have a question. Is there an algebra of constraints here?
Good question. The answer is I don't know. I believe there is, but I don't know. The first part, as far as the G is concerned, the answer is yes. They generate the sort of natural Bayesian transformation. We know exactly. The algebra demitons with themselves are not static. So Mark, this question.
I have to specify another question. Sorry. One second. Thank you. Is this the
Lorentzian
theory or the
Euclidean
theory?
Oh, yes. Sorry, I forgot to say something crucial. In fact, I was going to say the next slide, because for the moment it's nothing, right? This is just a dynamical system defined in this way here. The answer is that this is for the multi-parameter equal I or metasizing. Basically, Euclidean theory is a multi-parameter for one, if you want. Just because we're lazy and we have done the
simple
So I believe
one of the two is for some quarter.
Change the Hamiltonian has the multi-parameter and the second term in it, and so I have a Lorentzian theory is the correct Hamiltonian.
Hi, so following the question with Jorge, the only thing that you can depend on is the group or the link. The link is not going to communicate through the kind of stage. You don't want to look into this algebra or it doesn't matter for the story you're going to explain.
Let's go ahead and see. Let's go to the end of it. This is just a definition of a system. Let's see what happens. I don't know. So next slide is number 7.
It doesn't exist.
And so let's give an interpretation of this definition.
So what I
said here is that for each triangulation with something which we hope could be interpreted as a cosmological interpretation to the dynamics of the geometry of a closed universe. And as he was asking, this is Euclidean dynamics, and this is formulated with parameters. A closed universe, because it's much easier for me to think about the closed universe. U and E are the relation to this U and E as a continuous field, where, either triangulation, either the dual of the triangulation, so in particular each face has a link ES that cuts through. There's a little picture here that draws it somehow, making curves just to enter this. And U is the, I will give it the parallel transport of the Ashtikar connection on this dual link. And E, I want to think about it as the flux of the algebraic electric field across the triangle, parallel transported back to the center of the tetrahedron, in the formula explicitly. There, where U, E1, U, E, T are the anomaly of E1 being half of ES. So it's the little line that goes from the center of the tetrahedron with the triangle.
It's in Gauli cone.
If you compute the bottom bracket of the Ashtikar defined function, the U and E of the Ashtikar function, that's why this climatic thing to do with this. And what about the constraints? The constraints, again, approximate the gauge and the gauge one, integrating the continuous constraints in the size of the internal radio, the Hamiltonian one is a sort of a standard Hamiltonian tree where the curvature is regularized by closed loop.
In the second picture,
however, one does not think the unit is going to scale, the loop is shrinking down to zero. This is sort of one of the key points of all the contraction. Unit is, I mean, talking about scaling, it is not. Now, of course, this is an approximation, so it's gonna, the U differs from the, To get the correct Hamiltonian, one should have U equal 1 plus F, their correction terms. Now, the observation I want to make is that these correction terms are small if the loop is small or if the curvature is small, of course. So, if I have a fixed N, the regularization goes better and better as N increases, obviously, if the calculation becomes finer and finer. But if I fix N, and have a certain degree of approximation. And then ask what happens when the universe becomes larger. When the universe becomes larger, alpha becomes larger, and F becomes smaller, with the same ratio. So the approximation does not become worse. In other words, the approximation has nothing to do with whether the universe is large or small. The approximation becomes better with N irrespective of size of the universe. Another way of saying this is that if you think of going to a huge or nearly flat space-time, where it is small, the approximation U equal 1 plus F is
se parecen a estudiante de ella que defendió su tesis doctoral la semana pasada.
Loops for course triangulation. Y
le puede hacer ecuaciones sin ningún sentido ni son ni son, pero había un matemático que tenía que contar un detalle. Entonces, por ejemplo, él tenía un espacio físico cinemático, un constraint, el espacio de sirve físico. El matemático le preguntó: ¿es un subespacio? No, pero sí. Yo digo: no, es un límite impropio. Bueno, lo mismo hace otro. Trato que claramente no se hacía nada de nada. El matemático le dijo: yo no sé, pero.
The patient derivative term, it's easy to add a special derivative term, and it's also particularly
in this language. Pone la teoría de él y dice, bueno, acá resuelve un problema de medida con esta hipótesis. Digo, para como decía Freeman, ¿se cumple esa hipótesis? Buena pregunta. Lo mejor, dice. ¿Y qué pasa si no se cumple? Bueno, pues tenemos que ir a más.
Y nada, excelente. Nota máxima. Very, very remarkable.
¿Qué importa la vida pública? Yo lo felicito. Yo lo importa más que público. Y el que quiere dar plata, el que quiere dar plata, importa más que publica. Sí, que importa que se publica. Es una opinión social, realmente. La opinión de Fulis.
And almost everybody who's listening here know about the canonical loop of gravity. Basically, what one has is the interface of quantum gravity is with the single graph. The representation of that Poisson algebra is given by sort of operators on a Hilbert space, which is the L2 of L2 to the 2n, and the Hall measure, so state process function of this 2n group variables. The US operators are diagonal, and E, the ES variables are the representation of the Poisson algebra, the left invariant vector field on each L2. The E associated to the phase with hypothetical orientation,
it's the same
as the
right invariant. No,
the right invariant. Transformation on the detector, and the obvious way to think about this is to think it on the dual of the detector, which is the graph, so delta star m, this is the graph dual, and this is we have the networks on this graph. So equation one is the usual definition on a graph. If we add the scalar field, this is simply one extra variable in the state per each detector. So in equation 2, we can write our state in the Bayesian of the network. They depend on the spin on the links of the graph, the interfinal on the node, and the matter variables on the node. This is like in standard
contact,
we have a sort of a piece of loop gravity restricted on a given graph. And what about the Hamiltonian constraint? Well, we do have the loop which is dual to the bone of the triangulation. To the bone of the triangulation. So how to quantize this constraint? Well, there are two ways. One is namely replacing EE by the photo bracket between you and the volume. And the other is not doing that, which is viable here in the
A diferencia del mundo de la moda, donde se importa su opinión de alguna gente, acá está la naturaleza como árbitro, y eso para mí es muy importante. Vamos a conocer cuál es el segundo.
So, in the next slide, I consider the simplest version of all this, just to make everything complete, and in order that... This is just the model in the simplest case. We take number two, triangulations are sphere formed by two tetrahedra. So the two tetrahedra is the nice picture number one. This is a sphere which is triangulated in the simplest possible way. So the first tetrahedron is sort of the sphere, the second tetrahedron is the southern sphere, and the picture in equation number two, so two nodes and four links. The gauging band states can be written as functions of four spins, two indefinite and two continuous arms. One has explicitly the Hamiltonian, everything is completely explicit, so one can write the dynamic equation. And there are some coefficients in one and C2 that can be written simply using some recoupling theory. And what the control does is increase the routine of apples of link by one half. So, in principle, this is a well-defined model which is a bit more complicated than homogeneous cosmology. It has, I guess, 12 if I don't count the gauge, and one complicated equation put on a computer for the approximation that in some cosmology one can do, and place the task if they're bound or not in this model, and so on and so forth.
No, sir, but I will define
it. So, one can work with it. But that's also what we're going to do. We are going to try to see how, within this model, we can see whether the fundamental quantum cosmology is fixed. And the way of doing this, let's go to the next slide, slide 11, is we want to argue to do a Born of the Einhorn approximation. So let me remind you, just in case you forgot from your sort of primary school practice, what is a Born of the Einhorn approximation.
Remind you of primary school constraints,
so this slide 11 is the second rule of quantum gravity. It's just a one-page review of the work of Born of the Einhorn. So what did we do? This is sort of shortly after the birth of quantum mechanics, we're still in the 30s, I believe, and Born of the Einhorn wants to do the theory of molecules. And the molecules, in principle, is just the Schrödinger equation for the nuclei and the electrons, which of course is very complicated, and the body know how to solve. So they come up with this idea of this approximation, which is based on the main idea is to split the degrees of freedom in the heavy ones, which are the nuclei, and the light ones, which are the electrons. And the physical intuition here is that the nuclei are not too much affected by the rapid movement of the electrons, but only see all of them sort of collectively as their energy. So how is this first of all, one splits them is only in two parts. Now, first of all, the heavy degrees of freedom, the nuclei, little r is the light.
The
h little r, which is both the energy of electrons and the interaction energy. So, there's nothing symmetric in this case. And then they make an answer. And the answer is that there are a regime in the theory, and what could happen to a more regime in which the state, the quantum state, the wave function, which is a function of both big R and small r, can be written as a product of a state just for the nuclei by r, in a state for everything, where, however, the state for everything depends, does not change fast, or so change slowly in big R. So the idea is that phi is the quantum physics of the nuclei, and phi is the quantum physics of the electron in the background. And I place this question because it's, of course, what we want to copy in gravity, in the background of the position big R of the nuclei. Now, if one just takes the split of the Hamiltonian and the constant of the state and plugs it into the Schrödinger equation, the time-dependent Schrödinger equation, h phi equal e phi, there is a sort of partial separation of a variable thing. One writes everything, has an equality between two parts. One of the two parts does not depend on the electron variables, therefore each of the two sides should be equal to a certain function, rho of the nuclei position r, and therefore, I can split the Schrödinger equation in two equations, which is the system 1 and 2 written in the slide. And now this is important, the interpretation of these two equations. The first one, equation number 1, is the Schrödinger equation of the nuclei, which is the Hamiltonian of the nuclei equal the energy. So it's the Gavalian equation for the Hamiltonian of the nuclei, with a correction, which is n rho r, where rho is the energy of the electron. And equation number 2 is the Schrödinger equation of electrons, Well, in fact, the position of the nuclei is just seen as a animal. So this is a prerogative question that Vigar has, the role is doing in respect to Vigar. So in each given position of the, in each given background given by the position of the nuclei, there is a question. So now what we want to do, of course, is to apply this idea to the dipole cosmology, where big R is going to be the homogeneous degree of freedom, essentially K factor, and little R are the homogeneous degree of freedom, all the rest. So let's do that, and this is, and then we're now into the more technical part of what we're thinking. And we're basically doing the ball of an angular approximation for the N equal 2 dipole cosmology. So, first point one, just a little preliminary, we rewrite the group elements, UF, the change variable, we call our variable AF, which is the logarithm of the UF, which is easier, so basically the argument is not in the group. And we introduce, exactly like it's done in the cosmology, a fixed fiducial background connection, so to say, omega x, so an SE2 algebra element for each phase, for each triangle, which we find convenient to normalize the group. So now what we have to do is to split the degree of freedom, split the Hamiltonian, write the bottom of another fast, and split the Hamiltonian question. So the split of the degree of freedom is in equation 1 and 2, and 3 and 4. So what do we do? We are writing the A, so the homonymous, so to say, as a homogeneous part C plus all the rest, which is A. And similarly, we are writing the electric field as an homogeneous part T plus all the rest, which is H. Now, if I just write that, it doesn't make any sense, because I'm adding variable. This is not undefined, right? I can put variable into C or A pretty well. So I have two conditions to fix H and little a, and these are three and four. The first condition to fix little h, so to fix P and little h, is that I want P to correspond to the volume, because I want that when H I want P to be the variable that represents the volume, even when the next of my volume is my P. That's my definition of the volume. So, P is the condition of little h, and I want C to be the conjugate variable to P, essentially. And this is condition 4, which fixes little l, so fixes 1. And then similarly, I split the matter part into sort of the algebra matter part, the variation, and it's convenient also to write the volume of the two tetrahedra 1 and 2 as the total volume part of the E, the total volume minus delta. Now, I take the Hamiltonian constraint, in equation 5, I write it explicitly with all my variables, and what Bono Bernardo tell me I have to do is to write this as a sum of two terms, one piece that depends only on the homogeneous variables and all the rest. And this is easy, because the volume depends linearly on V plus delta V, so just A for the homogeneous part, the part that depends on the volume, and for the all these exponents here, I expand the exponents in the little a, and I keep on the first term, which is the one that depends on C and not little a. So the homogeneous part, which just depends on C and P, the homogeneous degree of freedom is written in equation 6, and the full constraint is this plus whatever the rest. And the interpretation is rather profound. This homogeneous part is the energy, the gravitational energy of the degree of freedom, of the homogeneous degrees of freedom, and the rest is the both the gravitational energy of the homogeneous degrees of freedom and the interaction energy. And then the Born of an Animal in fact is that the state can be written as a product, like in the last line of slide 12, where the second piece, C, the dependence on the homogeneous degrees of freedom C and T is small. So it changes small if I change C and T, the derivative of C and T is small. So if I let's go to
Piano.
Yes?
I have a technical question about omega n. So how do you choose it dependent on the triangulation?
No, we have, we have, we have this. it's very simple. We go into heavy technicalities. So it's fixed, it's one. It's basically exactly the script version of what is done in quantum cosmology, right? You take a homogeneous field, compute what it is, and this is what is your omega. I'm pretty close to the end, so let me finish and I spend 10 minutes to explain exactly how it's constructed. We get lost. If you take any paper on quantum cosmology, there is a construction omega X with basically exactly the let's go to the next slide, 13. Now, with plugging all this into the dynamical equation for dipole system, and with some technicalities one has to add to equation, and which I'm skipping entirely, one gets to these equations 1 and 2. Now, 1 is the quantum Friedman equation, corrected with a term in purple, which, as the obvious interpretation, is the energy of the homogeneous degrees of freedom that in fact affects the spin factor attitude. And the second is the Schrödinger equation for the homogeneous degrees of freedom. So let's take the first equation, 1, and let's take the final approximation and that is resulting entirely the homogeneous degrees of freedom. So we have equation 3, the average matter field is equal to certain operator. But we don't need operator. Everything is explicit here. Everything can be computed, everything is defined. So in the next slide, number 14, and the following one, there is an explicit calculation of the form of this constraint. The variable C multiplies a generator of a U1 subgroup by the C2 to the 4. So the variable C is compact. If you add to C 4 pi, you go back exactly to the same
Viste que te mandé los links a la conferencia de Penn State, sí, donde no figuramos como speakers. Exacto, ya lo vi.
Qué bestia, este gano.
¿Y qué pasó? Usted dijo que quería que hablara, sí. ¿Y entonces? Pero evidentemente quiere mantenerlo lo más privado posible. Al mundo no quiere decirle que lo mundo. Bueno, te invento la explicación más razonable de ustedes, si puede. No, pero es un poco patético eso. Cuando hizo la evaluación de su centro, no me invitó. Pese a que yo lo invité cuando organizé lo mío. Ni siquiera vino.
Así que
hay un track record de hacer cosas así.
I'm not gonna go through this manipulation, it's just a longer. It's just a rather simple calculation. I just wanted to sketch roughly what it is. Let's go directly to slide 16 with the result. And the result is that the homogeneous part of the system, so the Friedman equation, is the one in the box. So we are now on slide 16 on the top. And this has exactly the same precise structure of the loop quantum cosmology equations, namely the internal part has plus 2, a term mu, a term mu minus 2, with some coefficients which can be computed explicitly are given in the next line. And notice that here, the discreteness of mu is not an hypothesis in the form of the Neimer approximation, it's something already contained in the dipole cosmology, so to say. So one sees how this discreteness fits into the one graph approximation to quantum gravity. Okay, I'm getting close to the end. Just some final comments. First of all, in slide 17, I've made a list of things that obviously need to be done, but more or less obviously need to be done. One, was asked before, this is done in a sort of physical simplified version of the theory with compact loops that know the parameter. So one, if one wants to keep the compact group that has a non-trivial energy parameter in order to describe the Lorentz theory, the physical one, and we have not done it, but we believe that it's not too hard to do it, because the return of case becomes a little bit more complicated, but all the theories is the same. Second, as I said, we think that from under this way, the model is particularly adapted to do to add the realistic matter field. Point three, I think this is a key open question which I would like to understand better. These states, psi of mu, are well-defined states in our universe. So in principle, one should be able to expand them on the spin network basis, and I expect this is what sort of combination of spin network basis states are. It's just a notable effect you do, but I've not been able to do this integral, so I think it must be done and it shouldn't be too hard, somebody more better than me. And this will help us to understand better the relation between the full theory and the bigger theory, the smaller theory, which has to do with the fact that the U1 subgroup in LC2 to the 4th. I'm not sure this defining this way as a right homogeneous state, perhaps maybe it's the case that somehow all this should be clarified by relating this state to the network this and this. And this is also related to point number 4, namely I think that the new bar quantization scheme should be comprehensible in this language and should be so this is all things to be done. And I also wanted to add point number 5. I think that the model links itself very naturally also to spin conversion. Now, to spin conversion,
it's very, very nice.
One has to do that without changing the graph. And this is possible. There is a paper by John Barrett and Adam Ruth Williams and other people. Several years ago, in which they show how you can do a regular evolution where you don't change the graph, the spatial graph. The picture on the slide on the right shows how you can go from our spin network to back to our spin network with a 1-4 pattern move and then back with a 4-1 pattern move. So one just has to write the two vertices here, and one has a sort of one-step evolution in the model. And I think it would be interesting to compare this with a Hamiltonian solution. So the last slide is number 18, with a summary and then some comments. The summary is that we have two results. First result is that we have presented a family of models. So each one of them is self-consisting, and the suggestion is that they describe with an increasing approximation with n the dynamics of a closed universe, inhomogeneous universe, and the point is that one can really expect one can search for the bounds, etc., etc. And in particular, I noticed that I believe that the bounds will be there, and I am strongly convinced it is. This will allow, looking at C as a bound, to have explicitly a quantum state which includes the quantum fluctuations of the geometry of the bounds. And the second result is that within these models, the structure of the quantum cosmology emerge as a Born-Oppenheimer approximation to itself, I'm sorry. So this, we believe, should show how the assumptions on which the quantum cosmology is based can in fact be derived from this approximation of quantum gravity. Again, those results, I think, give us a basic idea that this can probably be done better. Now, three comments. One is that this quantum inhomogeneous fluctuation, this fluctuation of the inhomogeneous degrees of freedom, this quantum fluctuation and any degrees of freedom are physics, are real, and whatever one describes them. So I think it's more natural if one has a relatively simple theory to start asking questions, because they play a role in such information, inflation, etc. More specifically, even more interesting, I think if one takes the father Born-Oppenheimer approximation, the Friedman equation is corrected by this law term. So in the quantum Friedman equation, this law term is there, it's physics. So if it obviously small and negligible, as it has anything to do, is that a component of the cosmological constant? Is that any physical meaning at all? I'm just want to point out that the term exists. And then a comment which is not directly related to cosmology is that I think all this is based on a general idea that one can use coarse regulations in appropriate regimes and in appropriate approximations. There is a common intuition that near flat space, the only way to describe dynamics is to think as a very fine regulation. Many know, I think this intuition that I contribute with a buy-in lean, with a weave idea to motivate it itself. I think that the weave idea is correct, but does not mean that a coarse approximation, a coarse triangulation approximation is not viable for describing physics. In a sense, if this was the case, cosmology itself would be incomplete. Cosmology is the idea that a large degree of freedom makes sense and can be described and quantized disregarding a sort of shorter wavelength degrees of freedom. And of course, this is relevant, and that was one of the reasons for my interest, that not only for cosmology, but also for what we're doing with the endpoint function calculation. Okay, so the last PS is that my collaborator, Francesca Di Gotto, is applying for a PhD. That reminds you that I'm an undergraduate student, so if anybody has a PhD position, I just wanted to advertise that. And this is all now. Thank you very much. Wait for questions.
Hello, it's Lee.
Hi, Lee.
Hi. So I imagine that you first just tried the Born-Oppenheimer approximation just in the connection representation for the full theory and tried to work that through and then had to pull back to this model. Is that right? Or do you think there are any obstacles to just... Because the way you frame the approximation is, you take the connection and the electric field to be equal to their average value plus fluctuations. Is there any reason you couldn't justify that as a full theory and run the same argument?
Now that you say that, that's probably what I should have done. No, I have not done that at all. In fact, no, the Born-Oppenheimer approximation came. We wrote this discrete models, and we were hoping. Well, when we did that, we sort of were hoping that loop quantum cosmology was obvious inside them, and then in asking how it would fit inside them, we realized that there were some sort of heavy degrees of freedom and light degrees of freedom. We never thought of stepping back and to direct your Born-Oppenheimer approximation in the full theory. Maybe they should be done, yes, absolutely. It's the first time I think about that.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi,
John.
Your Born-Oppenheimer approximation, it is listing the same thing as the cosmological principle, or are they different?
In my way of understanding that, it's the same thing. Of course, the Born-Oppenheimer is a technical way of implementing a certain approximation to quantum theory. But my understanding is that it's a technical way of implementing the quantum theory precisely the cosmological principle, namely the idea that the short wavelength degrees of freedom do not affect much the long wavelength. But that's exactly what I was trying to communicate. Yes.
Carlos, is that right?
Hello.
I just have a couple of comments. One is just in terms of degrees of freedom, really. It seems to me that looking at your constraints, isn't it so that each triangle basically corresponds to just one degree of freedom finally, and you're taking care of the gauge?
Yes. Three minus no. There are three because the group is three dimensional per each triangle, but then there are two constraints per each tetrahedron. And the tetrahedron are half the triangles. So So the result is 2, not 1, I suppose, if I'm doing the arithmetic.
But, 2 and then, I'm sorry, so 2, but then there's also Hamiltonian test, so there's 1 predicate.
Each triangle has three degrees of freedom, right? Three plus three variables, each triangle. And so the number of degrees of freedom is three times the number of triangles, so it's six times the number of tetrahedra.
And
then
the face bending is the face bending is the freedom of configuration.
No, let's talk a configuration.
Okay, so 6 times the number of tetrahedra, right?
Right.
So therefore, but then...
So then you take away 2 for each tetrahedron.
Why is it only 2?
You're right. Because the gauge between the freedom is the algebra, of course.
Right.
So 3 plus 1, 4. No, you're right. Your arithmetic is about 1. Yes, so I agree with you. Sure.
Okay, so what is the final conclusion? For each tetrahedra, you have got how many degrees of freedom left?
6 minus 4, 2.
Okay. So, I think, in a sense, the case that you can consider, which is 2 tetrahedra.
Yes.
We only have 4 real degrees.
Exactly.
So, in some sense, I mean, this is a little more like, I mean, this is not the political correspondence, but it's more like an adult from this than university.
Yes, that's right. I try to think if we can rethink this in terms of anisotropy. I couldn't reformulate it to an anisotropic model. It's certainly not true when n increases then.
When n increases, you have the more and more degrees of freedom.
Yeah.
And going back to the issue that Lee was raising.
Yeah.
I think what Lee was saying was that maybe one should just average over all the start the full degree and average freedom in such a way that only volume remains.
Yes.
And then you can try to get the dynamics which is corresponding.
Yes. Yes. I think it's...
I just want to make a remark. If one looks at the Bianchi model, Bianchi 1 model actually.
Yes.
I've been looking at it more recently, and I'm not pretty finished, but I'm pretty sure that the structure is the following. That one again has, anisotropy, and so you've got more degrees of freedom now.
Yes.
But one can actually average, in other words, one can extract the volume degree of freedom. But not with the more one Oppenheimer approximation, but really average.
Yes.
And then along the lines that he was saying. And then one gets a dynamic which does reduce to essentially the homogeneous dynamics, which are present for time.
In the quantum theory or in the classical?
Quantum theory. Oh,
I see.
The first thing is very messy in a full constraint. But then when you average out and just look at the volume degree of freedom, so isotropic degree of freedom, then one gets an equation which simplifies enormously. It looks like the equation we have in the homogeneous. So,
but you get an extra term. Do you get the raw term? Because one of another is a sort of average, right? One average over the position of electrons, in a sense.
Yeah. So,
but then there's an extra term in the equation, which is, do you see this?
No, I don't. I mean, this term might be just a constant. I don't know about it yet. But it's not a non-trivial function of all the game time.
It's not.
So this constant, I'm not sure about that. But I just wanted to point that out. So, I mean, what I'm trying to say is that one could be more ambitious and say that, in fact, a la Lee, there's the exact quantum dynamics, which is very messy. But if I average our degrees of freedom and only look at how the volume of the density is like, behaves, one might get an equation which looks more like the homogeneous of the isotropic loop on cosmology equation.
Well, if it's true, then
in fact one might be quote unquote deriving the cosmological principle as John was saying, or the Oppenheimer approximation. One might be really justifying it from some first principle. And I know it's very ambitious.
Yes. sure, sure. No, I think that this suggestion is to be done, definitely. I mean, this is, I have two comments. One is that, after having done it this, in this sort of cube design model, my understanding is that, in the particle theory, this is what sort of Friedman showed, you really have homogeneous solutions by the equations, right? So you can have the homogeneous mode equal to zero and the fully self-contained dynamics. The dynamics scale factor does not excite the other models. In the quantum theory, there is the vacuum fluctuations of the other models, which are even there, it's not a quantum free theory thing, are even there in this, in these simplified models. So in other words, I sort of physically feel that there should be an extra term, which is disregarded if one does take the classical, the quantization classical Friedman equation, but one should be able to see if one goes that way. But it has to be studied, it has to be done.
The form of extra term may depend on how complicated the original model was.
Right, certainly, certainly.
So therefore, the Bianchi thing might be very simple extra term.
Oh, yes, yes, and it's short, because it knows more and more of the transformation. But, yes, yes.
I think Matthew wants to say something.
I wanted to comment on this discussion. There was actually a paper 2 years ago, which was also on this anisotropic model and how to recover the homogeneity in a different equation, which corresponds to the operator that you showed. And it was also just what Abai said, so you can do the expansion. So that way it's also possible to average out to the homogeneous, or to the isotropic mode. And that was a paper with the group of others, and Hector Hernandez, 2005, I think.
This is a paper of yours?
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
So it is really, that's one example. It's not inhomogeneous, but the way we want to do this averaging to isotropy. But then, I also want to comment that this, what you have here is really, I think, crucially different from anisotropic models, because you have two Hamiltonian constraints and not just one. So that would, in your case, then give you a second von Oppenheimer equation in addition to the isotropic Hamiltonian constraint. And I think listening back to Bob's question in the beginning, at this place, the constraint isotropy comes in blocking, we don't enclose, which you have anomaly. The second equation might actually tell you that there's no solution at all. So I think this is an important point here, which differs from anisotropic models, and which is really important for the general understanding of any kind of inhomogeneity, more than just one atomic constraint.
Yes, thank you. I mean, sorry for not knowing that because I your thing on Bianchi mode, one just came out. You put that. About the constraint algebra and Horn equation, I mean, the reason I didn't want to answer immediately is somehow the structure the reason we didn't care about that is that the structure we get is the one of the algebraic quantum gravity. Right? So we're exactly in the mathematics, sort of an extremely simplified version because the graph is simple. But we're the fixed graph with Hamiltonian. So the consistency of this model by itself relies on the consistency of the algebraic quantum gravity structure, which was shown by Christina and Thomas. This is much simpler, so I agree that we should compute this algebra and see exactly what happens. So I guess it's a nice thing to do.
You often get a good model to do something.
Yeah.
Any more questions?
Hi,
Christina.
So I would like to comment on the row expression in the quantum Friedman equation.
Yes?
I think just in the fact of choosing the beta field as a curve, because what you could do is mode, does the light constraint in the Paramount form, and then you get what we call the physical Hamiltonian. And
yes.
Then we calculate the capacity remasteration with respect to the data system, we could also end up with a classical remasteration which gets the extra energy density term. So I would think the physics of the proton is rather a fingerprint of the clock which interacts with the system because the dynamics of the coupling you observe.
No, I don't think so, Christina, because if you see what happens, the clock part is completely separated from that. I think we do understand what is the physics of this law. This law is just the...
No.
It's the energy density in the inhomogeneous modes. So, in fact, in principle, we could just not put the clock variable there, right? Just have an equation, like into gravity, and the law would still be there. This is we split the equation of freedom in two parts. We just look what happens at the heavy degree of freedom, which is the homogeneous one, but nevertheless, the approximation is reaching us. I think this is it's interest over just a simple averaging out the other degree of freedom. To see the effect of the average energy of the other degree of freedom, the light one, on the dynamics of the real time.
No mira la solución de eso, mira otra cosa y se queda con otra solución, porque si no es inconsistente.
No, él cuantiza y ignora la inconsistencia. De hecho, está haciendo lo mismo.
No se puede cuantizar e ignorar la inconsistencia.
La última lo hace.
If one does have a perturbation theory, one knows very well
si uno va a ser justo, lo estimaste igualmente mal.
Cosas que no son solución del sistema, sino que son cosas que son...
La teoría clásica de Riemann no existe. Y la cuantiza. Él hace lo mismo. Es la misma teoría de Riemann. Tiene razón en decir, bueno, si me quiere criticar a mí, que la teoría también, a ver si se anima. Últimamente la escribí 420 páginas, parece que no, él en realidad tiene derecho a ser eso. Y en realidad esto es todo Gambini. Sea el resultado final o cualquier cosa, que importa, digamos. Nunca nadie va a verificar esto.
John Ennis and Bukert and Mauro Kalfra, many people who suggested that in fact all or part of the cosmological constant or the major cosmological constant could be just a averaged out effect of the homogeneity of the small scale fluctuations. So I was even wondering whether attacking from this point of view, which one does not rely on linearity,
Mauro Kalfra argumentó eso.
Another approximation could say something about that. One thing I don't know, for instance, how this law depends on the scale factor. We have not computed it. That's why I have to compute the other equation, not the given one, the Schrödinger equation for the homogeneous modes, and see concretely how it looks.
Karma?
Yes.
So something has occurred, but there's some discussion here, and let me ask, use what you're saying to ask the following question. You're supposing just at the classical level of the classical Hamiltonian theory, you try to do such a project in Morocco.
Bienvenido. Me mandó una cartita que necesito para pagar a...
Sí.
La nueva serie, digo.
Ajá, bueno.
De todas formas, le escribo y le pongo así.
Sí, no fue nada por él. ¿Qué pasó ahora?
No le pagaron acá. Entonces devolvimos la plata, una plata que se suponía que era para pagarle, no le habían pagado.
Entonces, para esa organización usual, ¿no?
Um, I don't know, but I know that nobody's able to do that calculation. So I think rather than worrying, I would try to see if there's any different way of attacking the problem. Nobody knows how to do that calculation. Right? If you do it in the linear theory, that's important. But the point is that the Einstein equation is a linear, and therefore the result of the linear theory is not trustable. That's the full point that was made, I think, in the 70s by George Ebbing. And it's still there. So this is an approximation, but it's not a linear approximation, not an expansion for small fields. Yes?
At least for the Kepler,
would Kepler really be interesting? Or would Kepler be interesting? No, sure. There is a framework. There is your framework. There is the others. But nobody has been able to do this calculation.
We have done a small calculation. This is just a simple thing on cosmological calculation. We really exactly what we actually want. Which is the sort of and look at that from a calculation viewpoint. Correction. You can see statistical analysis of what you see is dynamic. So they are just the only picture in the paper basically describes the two different paths, time with the convenience dynamics without correction, the convenience dynamics. Basically, it was that. And for the full theory, you can treat at least everything to contain nicely with observers.
I see, thank you. Thank you. Okay.
Just getting back to the academic question about the anti-morph. I was just mentioning it before.
The angle of the angle.
I do not have the exact. Quantum constraint. However, if I look at the effective equations, then the effective equations is exactly what one of the physical experiments does happen, namely the bounds. First of all, the total energy density is bounded above, but
yes.
In the bounds, if you have no anisotropy, then the energy density is equal to critical density.
Yes.
But in the Bianchi model, the effective equation, the bounce is really occurring at a density which is below. And furthermore, more the anisotropy is the emission state, the more the difference is. So this idea that there is some energy in the gravitational waves which are smashing around causing the anisotropy, and therefore the total equation, simple equation is modified, is correct.
I see.
So again, what behind fact is also to at least the effective equation of government, which is there, and I'm pretty sure it's also true at the bottom level, as far as the anti-body is concerned. So I think we are all on the same level.
On the same, yeah. So there is a consistency there. There is a general picture that is there.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yes.
I have a question. I mean, you discussed it as a technical point, but it seems to me that this is a very important point in your approach. That is, the fact that you are able, you say that on the way.
The definition of the guy?
Yeah, the fact that you are able in the London graph to define what you mean by the emerging spectrum, to identify what is the emerging spectrum. I thought this was one of the key outcomes to identifying quantum gravity, what are exactly the states that are the emerging.
Yes.
So now you say that in fact you have an understanding of how you can define an emergence connection and an emergence background in a arbitrary dimension.
Let me now answer. I didn't want to sort of in the middle of the how's computer and then what it is. This first of all was done in the dipole cosmology, right? So basically you have only four omega, you have one omega two, omega three, omega four. So look at first the result and then how is it obtained. Well, the result is very simple. You are in the algebra of Q2, the three dimensional space, and you just take four vectors in the algebra, which are points over the faces of the phase, roughly. And you take them length equal to one, and these are the four omega s. I mean, and then you show it doesn't depend on how these are oriented, because it depends only on the other diagonals. So it's different diagonals in that, in the algebra. Now, how are these defined? Well, basically, you follow what happened in loop quantum cosmology. One easy way of writing an homogeneous connection for a homogeneous background connection for a three sphere is to use this is the trick that is repeated. You identify the three. You read the three sphere as the group manifold of FU2. In fact, these are three sphere. So now we're talking three sphere matrix regular. And so you have a background connection which is given by left invariant spectral field if you want, by G minus 1 dG is the one form. If you do a regular transformation over it, then you can integrate the background fiducial connection, the one that uses cosmology, along the dual links. And define our discretized background connection. And then there's some normalization things. So it's not technically too complicated once you start seeing what has been done by Martin, etc. Now, I think in your question you were saying something else, which is, can we do that for an arbitrary triangulation? That's what you were hinting at. And I haven't thought about that. I would say that following the same logic, one can go into an arbitrary calculation, but certainly we have not done. We've done the Bohr-Banach calculation only from the n equal 2. One question that was posed by Sergei Alexander, who was here a couple of days ago, and Francesca talked about that, is if you start from a n equal not two, I mean, higher one of these models and do the same approximation, do you follow the same homogeneous quantum cosmology? I think it's a good question again, not that.
I'm pretty sure that, I mean, it's not obvious, I'm not excited, on the other hand, you know, just following the idea that the anti-introduced, which has to do with taking a connection, really averaging those groups.
Yes.
And you know, even any point of the phase space extracting from it good homogeneous modes by educating it.
Yes.
I think that is certainly possible. And then once you have that, then one would actually sort of still adapt you to the triangulation along the lines that you said.
Yes.
So I think it should be possible.
So it should work for every pool triangulation.
Yeah, I would think.
Well, I was worried that you said that in general when you work with regular triangulation, what you would call homogeneous is not necessarily the guy that has exact the same edge length. Or I mean, it's the odd notion to pin down the property of what geometry you describe by, you know, the graph could be random, the coloring could be widely, I don't know, variable, and you could just describe that space. So this is one of the stumbling blocks we are, you know, for a long time. How do we interpret the way the modes are exactly because they are interrelated in a sense. But if there was an easy way to identify, and maybe there is, maybe you ask that the curvature is, I don't know, homogeneous over every space. So, but if there was an easy, sharp way to identify what you mean by an homogeneous space,
I don't know the literature that well. At least in the case of the torus, right? They tell us, given any point of the same space, how to extract the homogeneous floor of the way. So, I think.
Who are you saying, Yelka?
Yeah. Yeah, the literature. And Tamborino.
In that
word? First, given any point in the classical phase space, you can extract the homogeneous bits of it. Then, given any triangulation, we can do what Carmo was saying, take this homogeneous connection and extract from it the analogs of omega for given
by or, yeah, sure, exactly. The thing is, the closest that thing Jesus part is this. Once you have a sphere, it's easy to write a regular thing in it.
But if I can make one comment, I mean, the problem the longest write seems to be like the problem that you can have many equivalent combinations or many different combinations of letter names, which seems to be the way to teach the language problem. So probably this is identifying what we need to do, and I think that we have to do it for all of those investigations if it's very interesting to think about the same kind of problem. Put a triangulation which might look very homogeneous to a very incomplete one.
Okay. So you want such a triangulation, rather than be able to integrate out your homogeneous collection and give us something which does not look homogeneous, but that is by definition of homogeneous collection, that triangulation. I agree, the question of our own planet is dependent on system. If that is what we're actually reminding us, this is a more complicated question. I think for your triangulation, which I think is what Carlo is using here in the future triangulation.
Yes. John, I know. Of course, we need you here for doing all that.
Of course, there's a deeper problem with trying to define homogeneous quantum state, because the symmetry condition forms the second class system, and so you can't impose it exactly in quantum theory. And this is a deeper problem. Of course, I think I fully understand exactly how you are defining quantum states here, but I just wanted to mention that.
Yes, and in fact, I should have added to the list of things to do. And when I said well, we're not really sure these are the right homogeneous states to look at, because behind there is all the question basically that you have discussed what's the meaning of being homogeneous here. Of course, we cannot ask the homogeneous variables and the homogeneous velocities to be exactly equal to zero. So this is one particular choice. This is why I think there is the freedom you pointed out, which is there. It's completely obvious here. In fact, Oppenheimer is a specific choice of what one means by homogeneity. Our state only depends on the variable C, which means that they are independent on the variable A. I'm sure you all have forgotten the meaning of this thing. They are independent of the inhomogeneous degrees of variable in the connection representation, which means that the inhomogeneous degrees of variable are fixed in the geometry representation. So it's just one choice. And as you pointed out very, very nicely, there are others, and there are intermediate, especially, choices that might be the right thing to do.
So very nicely pointed out.
I fully agree that all this part is still to clarify to the
okay.
But that's why we wanted you to be here while we're doing this.
Any other questions?
I think we have time for the bridge.
Okay, so let's thank Carlo again.
Thank you, Roy.